And I'm Steve Scher.
Finding housing in Seattle is getting harder and harder. Seattle is going to grow by 120,000 more people by 2013. There are almost 310,000 places to live in Seattle right now, and the city hopes to add nearly 50,000 more by 2024. So far, we're on track. But the question is, who can really afford to live here? The sad reality is there's just not enough affordable housing to meet the demand. This week, we're documenting the quest to afford a place to live in our series, Game of Homes. Today, we're on strategy 3, share. The average household in Seattle is just over 2 people, but the people producer Hannah Byrne and I met, for this installment of our series are living with a lot more. We made the short trek from our studios to 18th Avenue in the University District, and that's where we met the ladies.
I call them the ladies. This one is second in command. This one's crazy lady. She's kind of crazy. That one's just black lady. She's head of pecking order, Carl, pretty lady. She's like the most neutral chicken, so I just call her chicken.
That's Angelina Gretzkaya, tending chickens in the front yard of the Sherwood Cooperative. The half dozen or so chickens, like most everything in this house, are cooperatively owned. Because one way to pay less for housing is to get more people paying for it. This is where we met Joe.
I'm Joe Hiller, and we're here at Sherwood Cooperative in the U District.
And what is Sherwood Cooperative?
Sherwood is a collectively owned property. We're a house with 14 rooms, between 14 and 16 people.
When this was first built, was it built for 14 rooms?
I'm not sure of the history of the actual structure. I know that people have been living here as students, the student co-op, since the 70s. And Sherwood itself actually traces its roots back to the Great Depression, when there were a whole plethora of student cooperatives across the country, including a whole bunch here at the University of Washington.
How did you come to be here, and how'd you come to be somebody who focused on this way of living?
Well, partly I moved to Seattle in the hopes of finding more community here. It fosters communication and accountability to other people that we see on a daily basis and really care for and can check in with. And we can share resources, so are a lot more sustainable than people who are using things individually, buying things in individual size servings instead of in bulk.
Hey, Joe, yeah. This front room we're in here, mm-hmm. It shows it's well lived in, including a mailbox with that even looks like more than 14 mailboxes.
Yeah, we have mailboxes for each individual member of the house, as well as past members. So that's what this hefty stack is here.
And you have the box for rent.
Right.
Is that exactly. Always well taken care of?
It is, yeah. Yep. Since we're not really paying a landlord, we're able to pay fairly low prices, and that we also share food.
What's it costing you to live here for a month, all those
for
things
me,
together?
All those things. It varies a little bit depending upon how many days I'm in town and things like that, but I think last month I paid $345.
Food, utilities, yep. Mortgage.
Mortgage, yep.
How do co-ops and other sharing housing work towards the bigger picture of getting enough affordable housing in Seattle?
Well, I think one thing is that they're really dense, so you can use a smaller number of structures. A lot of people can share the space, share the labor. So I think, like as the question frames, affordable housing is really, there needs to be a lot more of it in Seattle.
But is it dense? I mean, there's probably 14 people living in that apartment building across the street.
That's true. I guess in terms of, it feels dense when we see each other so often. So I think in terms of being affordable, but also then not isolating, not individual small apartments. That's something I'm worried about with the apartments is I don't know how much people get to see other folks in their building.
Who lives here?
I'd say it's about half students, both undergrad and graduate students, and then a number of people who are like me who have graduated from undergrad or maybe tried grad school for a while. But then there's a lot of people who are working part-time, who are maybe saving up some money for traveling or for working in political work. And
what do you call the fellow co-opers? Are they your roommates?
We call them Sherwoodies or Sure Homies. So, yeah, that's the I just call them.
What don't you share as Sure Homies?
We don't share. We all have some individual food, hot sauce or beer, things like that that people want for themselves. I guess our own rooms are really our own space. So only if we want people to come in, can people come in?
Joe decided we were 2 people he'd let see his room. So we took the creaky stairs passing by a lot of familiar dorm-like clutter on the way up.
Oh, another thing actually on the way up. This is our free closet. It's kind of in a little
bit
messy
right now.
It's kind of our lost and found, but it's also, if people have things, old clothes or some leftover art supplies, these pants are from the free closet, actually.
Well, they're very nice.
Thanks. This is my bathroom in here. We call it the pink bathroom because it's painted all in pink.
Yes, it is. So how often does this get cleaned and by who?
Someone spends 3 hours a month cleaning it. We've got the little thing tapped up on the wall.
Is one person assigned to this bathroom for that month?
Right, for that month. And then my room is through here. I don't know if
this would... Yeah. I'm just wondering, this is great. This is a big room. You have the front of the house, too.
Yeah, the way the rooms work is anytime someone moves out, then all the current members have an equal say at moving into their room if they want to.
How do you decide that? I mean, I'm sure you must have had to be in competition for this room.
This one, it worked out kind of well. So I'm one of the people who shares a room by choice with Sarah, who is downstairs. So part of it is...
You mean you're a couple?
Yes. Okay. Part of how the room decisions are made is if people have a good claim for why they need a bigger room, say if two people are going to share it, then housemates will say, yeah, okay, that's reasonable.
So you told me what you like best about this, the sharing, the working together, making friends, being with lots of people. What frustrates you about living in co-op housing, especially a big co-op like this?
I think at times it's difficult to create a system in which everyone contributes equally. Twice a month, we have big, long meetings at which we talk about a lot of the house business, and also we have a place or a time set aside in the meeting we called Vibes, in which we talk about feelings about things.
Is that okay?
And yeah, it
works. Not too weird or not too annoying?
No, I wouldn't say so. Sometimes it can get quite long, I think is the hard part, that it requires a pretty large emotional investment.
By the way, can you see yourself living here in 20 years?
I think, I don't know where I'll be, if I'll be even in the U.S. in 20 years, but I could see it being a possibility.
Do you think that having the common rooms you have and smaller rooms otherwise make it much more conducive to meeting each other than new apartment buildings? Is it actually that you are a little cramped that makes it more cooperative?
I think it's both being a little more cramped, and a lot of the people here have chosen to live in a place where they value that interaction with other people. So I have a friend who's a cancer survivor, so he can't live in old structures. He needs to be in pretty sterile new buildings. So for that reason, he lives in a new building in Capitol Hill. And he talks about how he so infrequently sees his neighbors, in part because they work at Microsoft or they work at places that take them out of the city. And when they get back, they don't care about...
Well, everybody has a kitchen, everybody has a bathroom.
Right, exactly. So they have very self-contained lives within the building. I'm not saying that Microsoft workers don't care what's happening in other people's lives, but who want to live with people who will check in with them. And
at that point, the person Joe shares his room with, yes, his girlfriend, walked in. Sarah agrees that this co-op is affordable housing, but that it comes with a trade-off.
The way I think of co-ops is that instead of paying in money, you agree to pay in time. It's just if you're willing to make that trade-off, if you're willing to do the work for it, it can be affordable to live here.
He said he could see himself living here when he's 70.
Yeah.
You too?
I have no idea where I'll be when I'm 70. But I think, yes, that this would be a good place to live.
Because you like sharing the space.
Yeah, exactly. It's good to have a little bit of personal space, but it's also really nice just to have people who are kind of keeping track of you.
That's Joe and Sarah's solution for affordable housing. Yesterday we talked to a man living in an apartment for whom... even seeing or talking to his neighbors in passing was a rarity, but he didn't seem to mind. This week, we've been exploring a real-life game with real-life outcomes, how to find affordable housing in Seattle. Our game of homes has explored a few strategies people employ. People can get help from the government. They can shrink their footprint and maybe find a decent-priced smaller place. People can share a space or crowd together. This is what the Pokrell family is doing.
That is the next door and this door. We are actually 11 number family here.
Titraj Pokrell and his family were forced out of their homes in Bhutan. 2 decades ago, the government started expelling its ethnic Nepali citizens. Almost 100,000 Bhutanese citizens settled into refugee camps. The Pokrells lived there for 19 years. One child was born there. Their living situation is better than it was in the camps.
One hut not a room. This is built by the plastic and bamboo.
The Pocos came to the U.S. in 2010 and were settled in Seattle. The extended family shares two-bedroom apartments in a building on Rainier Avenue. One rents for about $750 a month, the other for $850. The ground floor apartments are across from one another. Titraj Pokrel's mother and father, a sister and her husband and child, live in one apartment. He lives with his wife, three children, and a grandchild in the other.
We are sleeping on the floor. Me, my wife, and my daughter, little daughter.
Where are your mattresses?
Nothing. We are take something here, then sleep.
You mean you take blankets?
Blanket and this pillow. We have no enough income source. I work in full time. Then all the my three kids are going to college. My wife getting a part-time job. So very hard to solve the problem. That is the main cause to sleeping like this.
My name is Gayatri Pokhrel. Like, there is no any choice. We need to stay together, whole family.
Actually, in my culture, we have to live together. In American culture, if a person are old, they're gonna send them in nursing home or somewhere else, right? But we care them, so we have to live together.
That is Farid Pokhrel. He's a student at Seattle Community College. And so is Gayatri, and so is Yasma Pokhrel.
After, like, we are so happy we live with our family. You know, like, we love each other, and then we don't want to live, like, separate from our family.
Our holy book also say like this. When I grow up, my parents should be help me to grow up. When they become old, I should help them. That is our culture. That is our definition and destination.
Titraj Pokhrel was a plumber in Bhutan. He earns about $1,500 a month now as a houseman at Embassy Suites in South Seattle. His parents get Social Security payments. His wife works part-time as a caregiver. His sister works at the hotel as well. Yozma cares for her brother and is studying nursing.
When I have to, like, study, I go to my room and then I close the door and I study. So they give us the room.
We never on TV at night, never. They eat food, then go to the bed to study. We cannot on the TV. We can give the opportunity kids to reading alone. Keep quiet.
They share the cleaning and the cooking. Sometimes they eat together. But their schedules don't often match, except uncomfortably in the morning.
Sharing the bathroom, six people walk up together, waiting for 45 minutes to 50 minutes, for 1 hour, waiting for next to go. That is difficult. What to do? There is no choice. Very difficult for us, no? Getting another house.
The bathroom leaks a bit, and any painting Titraj Pokhrel wants done, he does himself. They don't feel all that safe going out at night. Their corner has been the scene of several shootings.
There is no choice to move from here to another place. We can pay money, deposit money. We have no left money. When they are going to college, one book buy $1,300, $1,400, $1,500 for 1 quarter. Then after that, when they finish to read, then sell this book, they give only $200, $300. There is no choice.
But my life is better than the refugee camp. I'm happy like what I have. If I go to college, then in the future, I may have the better life. I'm not expecting that good life right now. After I become a nurse, then I may buy the house, you know, and then I keep my mom and dad and my brother, my family, everybody, and then I may spend a good life.
Yozma Pokhrel. We also heard from father Titraj Pokhrel, daughter Gayatri Pokhrel, and son Farid Pokhrel. The extended family of 11 is living on Rainier Avenue in Seattle in two-bedroom apartments. And tomorrow, another strategy for finding affordable housing in Seattle. You can leave the city altogether for less expensive housing further out. Flee is the final strategy in our series, Game of Homes. This is The Record on KUOW.